This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 10th of July, 2023. Pretty curious session on Friday as we saw as we got the U.S. jobs report and the market reaction to that, which was a little bit enthusiastic initially because it was a somewhat soft report. The non-farm payrolls coming in a touch softer than expected, and then the negative two-month revision of minus 110K. So it took a little bit of the sense of this crazy surge that we saw the prior day in the ADP private payrolls out of the equation, perhaps meaning less pressure on the rates market, therefore risk sentiment could try to recover. But then we ended the day back lower, and we've kind of spilled lower again here in Asia to start the week. And just looking across markets, some really curious things going on. I think we'll cover that a little bit later. It feels to me like there's some big sort of consensus positions or heavy positions out there that are being challenged, the shape of the yield curve, et cetera. But I don't know if you have anything to pull out of specifically out of yesterday's session. I mean, what we're gearing up for here is this week's CPI number on Wednesday, Peter, and then we have the earnings season kicking off here later this week.
No, I mean, we're seeing weak markets that are coming off the recent highs. The higher long-term bond yields obviously having an impact on the equity market, and then otherwise the equity market is waiting for the Q2 earnings season to start off. It happens on Thursday. We'll get back to that later in the podcast. But if you look across the spectrum here on the 1 week performance, you can really see that there was very little positive price action last week. There was of course the green transformation basket. We covered that already. Driven a lot by the electric vehicles. A lot of talking and noise about electric vehicles and to what extent they are changing the transportation landscape. And then logistics were also strong. The weak baskets were the renewable energy basket and semiconductors. And semiconductors is actually starting this week on a different note, actually quite a strong note. But again, we'll get back to that. But otherwise, we're not seeing major things. I think it's, as you said, John, it's the inflation report on Wednesday. We're looking ahead for or ahead to, and then on Thursday and Friday's earnings. And then we'll really kick into gear in the following weeks.
Yeah, and then I think just on that positioning angle. So I think we certainly saw that in the FX market. So the biggest mover saw a very weak dollar late Friday, which it looks so odd here. We're seeing this big rise in U.S. Treasury yields. I think a lot of this is driven by dollar yen. The yen positioning, that huge yen short out there, was getting turned around late last week. And I would suspect if this is a positioning thing and if this continues, that if we look on the other side, what are the currencies that the market is quite strong of? Ola, you put out your weekly COT report. That sterling position is at sort of almost historically strong levels, 50,000 plus contracts on the long side, sterling versus the U.S. dollar, the huge Japanese yen short. Put two and two together, looks like that would be from a positioning angle risk. And then just to round out that positioning thought as well, there are huge treasury shorts if you look at the 2- and 10-year. But looking at the trends in the market, I suspect that the consensus is that we're going to see continued bear flattening or inversion, if you will, on the yield curve. And what we got last week was quite a profound bear steepener. And I don't think the positions are very well prepared for that. But I don't know if you've pulled up, you did pull in one chart here on positioning.
No, but you can see it on my Twitter profile. I sent out the picture there yesterday. And what we can see, as you mentioned, John, that the so-called what we call fast money, basically speculators, they continue to hold a very elevated short position where the less volatile positioning held by asset managers has got the opposite position, and it just highlights the risk that if the fast money are forced to change, then that obviously that could change, so add some additional volatility to the bond market. We saw plenty of that last week.
Yeah, and then we see you did pull in a chart here on slide 4. So the Mexican peso, one of the very popular carry trade, brought that into the conversation last week. It was just a very brief but very, very sharp backup we saw in the Mexican peso. The dollar mex was one of the things I focused on, but you bring in the contrasting the Mexican peso positioning on the long side with that Japanese yen on the short side.
Yeah, I think it was really an eye-opener what you said last week, John, with the carry trade, that if not only has the Mexican peso obviously been rallying, but if you take the carry into consideration as well, and that's the yellow line, the carry return, we're looking at, since the start of 2022, a carry return of around 75%. that does obviously attract some speculative interest into the Mexican peso. And just like you mentioned, we have quite an elevated short in the yen. So it's based on this, it's relatively clear that this is a favorite carry trade right now, long max, short yen. And again, that creates the kind of volatility when you have corrections, because of the positions are not geared towards the opposite direction there.
Yeah. A couple other things in FX. We have a pretty soft Aussie. It's backed out a lot of the gains it saw against the US dollar on Friday. Not yet breaking to the downside, but some heavy action there. And I think that's driven by the overnight inflation data out of China. We saw 0.0% year-on-year CPI print from China. That's below the plus 0.2% expected. PPI was also highly negative, and I think that's weighing to a degree on the sentiment for China-linked currencies. We saw a big pop in oil prices on Friday. That helped the Canadian dollar to reverse out the prior day's rally. But the IV PMI from Canada, the big PMI that they issue, down at 50.2, so we're sort of teetering on the edge of a contraction there. And then finally this morning, we got the Norwegian core CPI out at another cycle high. Some of these smaller countries still struggling with inflation. It was up 0.9% month-on-month, the core inflation, and 7% year-on-year. That was a new cycle high and above expectations, obviously. So some different, very different levels of inflation and trends that some of these smaller countries are grappling with relative to, for example, the U.S., where we're seeing disinflation. And I'll talk about the expected CPI print later this week. But I'm not sure that this dollar move had broad implications, judging from the price action we're seeing coming in early this week. Let's see, where do you want to pick up the commodities discussion? Well, because we're waiting for the next move, really, in metals. Certainly copper and gold have just been sort of coiling and not doing anything convincing here.
No, exactly. And just also finishing off the oil story, we have rallied last week, but we're still in the stock in the range that we've been within now for the past 2 months. So just keep an eye on that 78.50 level, or 50 to 75 level in Brent crude. If we do break that, that could trigger some additional short covering and momentum buying, even though maybe the fundamental outlook may not really support a much higher move at this point. But the today's focus is mainly one on metals. I left gold out because there's not much going on. We need to break above that 1935 area, really, to ignite some interest into that. So we're in a waiting mode on that one. But at the same time, the PGM sector, platinum group metals, have really been under pressure recently, and the main driver for that is palladium. Palladium seeing signs of increased supply, especially coming out of Africa. South Africa is a major supplier there. So, and at the same time, palladium is also suffering a little bit, becoming a little bit of a victim from its own success, basically the very high prices that we've seen in recent years. It's triggering some switching back to platinum, and that's basically putting some downward pressure. And if you look at the speculative interest, not only has the price reached the four-year low, but the speculative short interest has also reached a record high. So there's really a lot of short selling interest in palladium futures right now, and it's dragging down platinum, where the actual fundamental outlook looks quite a bit more promising, with a potential supply deficit starting to emerge this year and moving into next as well. It is used in gasoline cars, and obviously some of the hybrids they use platinum as well. So the future for platinum still looks fairly promising. But nevertheless, the discount to gold is back above $1,000. We've seen that a couple of times in the past couple of years, quite often being met by an opposite response. So watch out for platinum. It just looks relatively cheap once again.
That's amazing. A $900 platinum when you have $1,900 gold.
Exactly.
All right. And then anything you want to bring up on copper?
Yeah, just simply that something's got to break sooner or later. Something are going to give. Look at that range now. We've just been getting increasing the stock within a narrowing range, and holding around that 200-day moving average. That's a 42-week average on the chart. So at this moment in time, we all know the kind of talk of war between the China growth story, which is not great, and the inventory levels that continues to come down. We are near a cycle low once again as of last week. So it's not exactly as if copper stocks are inventories are building at this time, where the market are looking for a slowdown. So something's got to give, and this is just to highlight that that if we should see a move into this increasingly lower liquidity period as we're facing now in the next, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks, then some volatility could be the result.
Okay, we need to see volatility in the U.S. equity market if we want to see. I would suspect we would see that anyway if we see a breakdown. And we saw on Friday, even though we closed lower, that VIX once again it was sort of jumping intraday and it came back down towards the low. So, but you know, I guess to get more volatility as well, we might need to see some surprises or some reactions to the incoming earnings season. Until we get there, what are you focusing on in the equity market, Peter?
Well, we have had a preliminary earnings release from TSMC, which is the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, very long word, and one of the world's largest. It is the world's largest foundry business. So foundry business being that you come up with a chip design, let's say for a company in the US, you get it tested in various software and test environments in Israel. Then you go to TSMC with a chip design. You have struck the royalty agreements with Arm Holdings for certain parts of the chip, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very complicated thing. You go to SMC, these are the schemas for schematics for producing this chip, and the TSMC, okay, fine. And they use these very advanced lithography machines from ASML to do the chips, basically. So
it's a pretty remarkable industry, isn't it?
It is. And this book that recently came out called The Chips War is really a highly recommended book. Goes through the entire history of the semiconductor manufacturing industry, and it's actually a fun read. And given how important this industry is for the world, then if you want some reading, it's actually not a bad book for me to recommend you. Coming back to the TSMC story, it's the largest contract manufacturer for NVIDIA. So NVIDIA, when they produce the GPUs, which are used for AI and gaming applications, they use TSMC, and they came out with a Q2 revenue figure that was $15.3 billion for the quarter, down 10% from a year ago, but better than feared. And they didn't provide any outlook statements in that press release. It was very short. That will come with the actual Q2 earnings release. So this was just a preliminary figure. But I think it can actually move in a positive way the semiconductor industry, because it does show that there is a lot of good vibes around the semiconductor industry. It's turning around a corner. So watch out for companies like ASML, because they are a big supplier of these lithography machines for TSMC. Elsewhere, the renewable energy industry. So one of the largest infrastructure investment firms, or front managers, if you will, in the world, is located here in Denmark, in Copenhagen, called Copenhagen Infrastructure Partners, CIP. And they've basically been doubling the size of their infrastructure funds in renewable energy ever since the company was founded a couple of years ago. And this time around, they're doing it again. They're looking for almost a 13 billion euro investment fund in renewable energy. And they already got half of that settled. So we have a focus on renewable energy stocks in today's session, because it's a pretty big amount. And it just shows you that there's a lot of demand, both on the investor side, but also certainly in terms of the investment opportunity set. There's a lot of assets that are requiring funding. So that's something we're going to watch. And then on the next slide, the earnings season, it kicks off on Thursday with Pepsi Cola and Delta Airlines. I think the Delta Airlines is in for a potential upside surprise. I haven't actually looked at the option market how it's pricing this earnings release, but the airlines have been doing quite well recently. And then Pepsi Cola, one of the largest beverages and snacks businesses in the world, doing almost $100 billion in revenue. This company is traded more like a bond, basically. So you have a free cash flow yield below 3% in the current yield environment, pretty staggering to say the least. But it's a business that is just having super stable margins. It's super predictable. It grows at least with inflation, and it has a lot of buying power, or bargaining power against its customers, so it can raise prices, and that is why it's so attractive. And then on Friday, we have highlighted it last week, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, and Citigroup will be reporting. FT has an article where they're focusing, we can expect more loan loss provisions, yada, yada, yada. But if you take the total series from the regulators in the US, you can see that the loan provisions, I mean, there's almost yesterday's story. They already have ticked up a little bit. And the overall cycle since the pandemic started, we are running at higher loan loss provisions in the US banking system than in the years leading into the pandemic. And I think it's also a reflection of all that money that was pumped into the system and, you know, the subsequent bankruptcies, etc. So I wouldn't pay too much attention to that. As I've said before, I'm leaning that, the expectations are extremely low for US banks. I think there's a probability or a greater chance that they can actually surprise to the upside on Friday, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting one with also the whole Main Street versus the investment bank angle of things. All right, let's go to the macro calendar. There's a few bits and pieces today, some central bank speakers. A couple of them will be voters next year, the Fed's Mester and Bostic, and they're not voting this year. And we have the Bank of England's Governor Bailey. You need to listen to him if you're trading sterling with the very touchy interest rates, very touchy on interest rates with the most aggressive forward expectations for a central bank out there among the G10 currencies, at least. And then on the subject of the UK, we do have the latest payrolls and claims data up tomorrow and the May earnings and employment data up from the UK as well. If you recall, the last couple of cycles have been quite volatile there. There was a really huge spike a couple months back that was sort of softened in the subsequent data. So let's see if this one sort of settles towards the one or the other direction. We'll preview the RBNZ and the Bank of Canada tomorrow as well. Those are up on Wednesday. And we have some treasury auctions that are a bit more interesting than usual this week. The 3-year tomorrow, the 10-year Wednesday, and 30-year Thursday because of that, again, the big surge we saw in longer-term yields as we've seen the yield curve quite aggressively steepening over the last. All right, risk sentiment a bit on the defensive here. We'll see how this shapes up and where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.